Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone, Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man number 29, Trek of the Mountain Man. Narrated by Mort Shelby, with performances by James Lewis, Tim Getman, Elizabeth Jernigan, Drew Kopis, Tim Carlin, James Konacek, Michael Glenn, Richard Rowan, Mort Shelby, Ken Jackson, Thomas Keegan, Kimberly Gilbert, Thomas Penny, Christopher Sheeran, Terrence Aselford, and Joe Brack.
William Pike, known to one and all as Bill, stood up in his stirrups and stretched his neck and back. It had been a long ride from Corpus Christi, Texas, to the Rocky Mountains of Colorado. He sat back against the cantle of his saddle and turned to look at the nine men riding with him. They were a disreputable and dangerous-looking lot. Most had beards, some grown to cover knife or bullet scars, others just worn because of a lack of hot water while riding the Owl Hoot Trail. Pike and his men thought of themselves as regulators, a fancy term for bounty hunters that shot first and asked questions later. They were fresh from the infamous Nueces Strip, a corridor of land stretching from Corpus Christi down to the Mexican border. They'd made a good living there, killing or capturing the Mexican bandidos who came up from Mexico looking for easy pickings among the many settlers coming to the area from the east. That had all come to a grinding halt when the Texas Rangers sent in a man named McNally and a corps of other Rangers, every bit as tough and ruthless as Pike and his regulators. Suddenly, the pickings were as slim as the 12-inch stiletto Pike carried in his boot. The bandidos began to shy away from the area, and the other robbers and rapists and footpads were of such a small danger, they carried very low prices on their heads. Looking for a new territory to ply their trade, Pike and his men had ridden to Utah, home of many outlaws trying to hide from John Law. There he'd come upon what he thought to be a golden opportunity, a wanted poster offering a king's ransom for one man, a man who lived in Colorado. Pike turned his glance from his men to stare down the ridge on which he'd stopped his mount.
Hey, Bill.
Yeah, Roof. What do you want?
You said once we got to Colorado, you'd tell us why you brung us here. How about it?
Pike nodded. He guessed it was about time to let the men in on it. He reached inside his coat and pulled out a yellowed, wrinkled paper. He unfolded it and held it up for the men to see.
This here wanted poster's gonna make us rich, boys.
What's it say, Bill? I can't read it from back here.
Well, here's what this poster says, boys. Wanted, dead or alive, the outlaw and murderer Kirby Smoke Jensen. $10,000 reward. Contact the sheriff at Berry, Idaho Territory. 10,000 greenbacks, boys. That's nothing to sneeze at.
Hell, that's, it's exactly... Exactly how much is that for each of us, Bill?
That is $1,000 apiece, gentlemen.
Hank Snow shifted the chaw of tobacco from one cheek to the other.
That's if none of us gets killed before we collect it. More if a couple of us catch a lead pill.
Hank, the poster's for one man, not a whole gang. How's one man gonna stand up to us, the meanest, baddest gents west of the Pecos?
Now you're forgetting something, Roof. $10,000 on one man's head must mean he ain't no pilgrim himself. What did this hombre do to make himself so valuable, Bill?
Yeah. What did Sheriff up there tell you?
I didn't exactly talk to the Sheriff, boys. I didn't want nobody else to know we was after this Jensen feller. I got my information, along with this wanted poster, from a miner I met in a saloon up in Utah.
Well, We're waiting.
This miner said he was in Barry, Idaho Territory, a few years back, when some gents named Stratton, Potter, and Richards rode into town with a gang of outlaws. He said there were about 20 or so of them all told. A little later, this Jensen, along with a bunch of old mountain men, surrounded the town and told all the miners and town folks to get out of town. They'd come for the gang.
What'd the gang do to get Jensen and the mountain men all riled up?
Nothing much, Blackie. Just killed Jensen's wife and baby boy and stole all the gold he'd spent a year mining.
So Jensen and his gang rode into town and shot up the other fellow's gang?
Nope. The old miner said all the folks in town gathered on the ridges overlooking Barry and sat and watched as Jensen rode into town alone to face down the gang.
You mean one man went up against over 20 outlaws by himself?
Yeah. The miner says it was like a war down there. And when it was over, Smoke Jensen was the last man standing.
Jesus, I can see why he's worth $10,000.
I didn't say it was going to be easy, boys. But $1,000 apiece is more than we made in a year down on the Nueces Strip.
You're forgetting one thing, Bill. How the hell are we going to find one man in these mountains?
Easy. Out there, Smoke Jensen's ranch, the Sugarloaf. Now I hear he's given up his guns and turned into a peaceable gentleman rancher. Now I figure we'll ride in and surround the place. Kill any son of a bitch that makes a move toward a gun. Now this poster says he's wanted dead or alive, so it's just as easy, maybe easier, to kill the bastard.
Bill, that there wanted poster don't say nothing about no ranch hands being wanted dead or alive.
Hell, Blackie, you weren't so particular who you killed down Corpus way last year.
That was different. Them was Mexicans up from Mexico. And you know a Mexican's just a little better than an Injun.
Don't worry about it, Blackie. We won't kill nobody unless they draw down on us first. He'll most likely have a woman with him. So we'll take her too and have some fun with her tonight.
I'm gonna...
Now, go easy, Blackie. We won't kill her. Just work her a little bit to have us some fun. Let's ride, boys!
As they rode, holding out six-shooters, rifles, and shotguns, Pike grinned as he thought about how they were gonna kill Jensen and all his hands and take his woman for their pleasure.
Cold mouth, son of a flea bag, good for nothing!
Pearly struggled to hold on as his horse bucked and tried to swallow his head in the chill morning air.
Hey, Pearly! When are you going to learn to walk that hoss of yours around a little bit before you try to mount him?
Pearly held on to the saddle horn with one hand and the reins with another as his horse crow-hopped and danced around the cowboy's camp. Smoke Jensen smiled as he screwed a cigarette into his face and bent over a match.
Maybe he just needs a little coffee.
Pearly jumped down out of the saddle, gave his horse a baleful look, and flicked the reins over a limb of one of the numerous cottonwood trees that lined the stream where they'd camped the night before.
Say, Pearly, I know a man who's right handy with horses over a big rock. He could probably train that mind of yours so he wouldn't do that every morning when you get on him.
Pearly glared at Cal over the rim of his cup, his eyes flat and his expression black.
Cal, you know there ain't nobody in Big Rock knows any more about horse flesh than I do.
Cal cut his eyes over at Cold, the name Pearly had given his horse when it became evident he was extremely cold-mouthed in the morning and would buck for 5 or 10 minutes the first time Pearly got on him every day.
Oh yeah, I can see how well-trained Cold is.
Just because that broken-down old nag of yours don't have enough spirit to buck don't mean he's any better trained than Cold.
Cal looked at Smoke and rolled his eyes. Smoke was used to this byplay between Cal and Pearly, and he would have been worried if it ever stopped. He knew the two would each put their lives on the line for each other without a second thought.
If you two children are through jawing at each other, we still got some beeves to move.
Yes, sir. I'll be ready in a few minutes. After all, I don't have to spend a lot of time getting my mount ready to ride.
They were moving a small herd of 50 or so heifers south from the Sugarloaf to a distant neighbor's spread. The neighbor, a man by the name of Wiley, had made the mistake of buying some cattle from a seller who'd gotten them in South Texas the year before. Wiley's herd had been almost completely wiped out by Mexican tick fever carried by the Texas cattle. When Sally, Smoke's wife, heard about Wiley's plight from the man's wife one day in the general store in Big Rock, she immediately offered to stake him a new starter herd. So now, in the final days of autumn before the winter snows would come to the Colorado High Country, Smoke and his boys were making good on Sally's promise and driving the young beeves to the Wiley Ranch. As they got mounted up, Pearly held up a corn.
Call it, Cal.
I ain't flipping no corn for the drag position today, Pearly. I rode it all yesterday. My throat is plumb raw from all that dust I ate.
The drag position on a trail drive, riding at the rear of the herd to round up stragglers, is the worst possible place to be. A moving herd of cattle throws up a heck of a lot of dust in the air, most of which is breathed in by the drag rider.
Hey, Cal, as the youngest man on the team, you're supposed to ride drag every day. I think I'm being right nice to you, giving you a chance to win the point position by flipping for it.
But I always lose.
It ain't my fault you're the unluckiest man in Colorado.
All right. I call tails.
All heads.
Don't you ever feel guilty cheating Cal like that.
Why? What you mean?
I know all about those two coins you had made by the blacksmith in town. One with two heads, and one with two tails.
Pearly looked over his shoulder to see if Cal had heard what Smoke said. The boy was already 50 yards away and fast disappearing in the dust cloud that rose behind the herd.
You gonna tell Cal, Smoke?
No. The boy's a grown man now, and he's gotta learn to find these things out for himself. It's not up to me to teach him how not to be cheated. Especially by his best friend.
Aw, Smoke, I ain't exactly cheating, Cal.
If it's not cheating, what exactly would you call it, Pearly?
Pearly opened his mouth to reply, stopped. He just hung his head as he rode off toward the rear of the herd to change places with Cal. Smoke was proud of him. Both of the young men were far more to him than just hired hands. In fact, both he and Sally felt as if the two were members of their family, and they treated him accordingly.
Time to quit daydreaming and get to work.
Smoke had come to the high country of Colorado almost 20 years before with his father from Missouri to make a new life for him. Here they'd met up with an old mountain man named Preacher, who took both pilgrims, as he called them, under his wing and taught them the facts of life on the frontier. After Smoke's father was killed, Smoke rode with Preacher for many years, learning all the experienced mountain man could teach him about the mountains he so loved. It wasn't long before Smoke himself became one of the region's most famous mountain men, becoming a legend in his own time among that strange breed of men who had no use for civilization and its trappings. After outlaws killed his wife and son, Smoke and Preacher tracked him down to Idaho. Smoke killed every one of the sons of bitches in face-to-face combat. This put him on the Owl Hoot Trail for a time, and he was a wanted man, until some federal marshals found out the truth and got him a pardon from the governor. It was shortly after that when Smoke met up with a school teacher named Sally Reynolds, and he married her. They moved to the area where they live now and founded their ranch, the Sugarloaf. Smoke had stayed on the right side of the law ever since. Once the herd was bedded down for the night, Smoke and the boys made camp near a stream so they'd have water for cooking, though it was much too cold for bathing, that was for sure. As they sat around the fire, eating beans and fatback bacon cooked in a skillet, Smoke reached in a paper sack and took out a handful of biscuits Sally had prepared for him before they left the Sugarloaf. He pitched a couple to Cal and Pearly and kept some for himself. Pearly used the biscuit to sop up some of the juice from the bacon and popped it into his mouth.
Boy, Smoke, these sinkers Miss Sally made are sure tasty.
How would you even know how good they taste, Pearly? You're such a chow hound, you didn't even chew them before you swallowed.
You don't have to chew these, cowboy. They plumb melt in your mouth. You don't happen to have any of them bear sign Miss Sally made, do you?
Smoke looked into the paper sack. He reached in and pulled out two bear sign and held them up.
I see there's two left.
He pitched one to Cal and kept one for himself.
Sorry, Pearly, but if I remember correctly, You had a mite more than your share at our noon in a day.
Smoke, you know you can't do that to me. You and Kyle wouldn't eat those bear sign in front of me without sharing, would you?
I know, Pearly. Why don't we flip a coin for the last one?
Pearly smiled quickly. Then his face fell, and he hung his head.
Oh, I know I shouldn't have told you about them two-sided coins, Cal.
Here you go, Pearly. You can have mine.
Well, you don't want it?
No, Sally's been after me to lose some weight, so she won't have to spend all winter letting out my britches.
Smoke was anything but overweight. Standing a little over 6 feet tall, with shoulders as wide as an axe handle, a stomach that looked like a washboard, and arms as big around as Pearly's neck and hard as granite, he certainly didn't need to lose weight. Pearly knew it was simply Smoke's way of letting him have the bear sign without any argument.
I just can't do it, Smoke.
Pearly tore the bear sign in half and threw part of it back to Smoke.
But I will let you share it with me.
Smoke took the bear sign and dunked it in his coffee cup.
I agree with you, Pearly. Sally is the best cook in the territory.
In the territory? Hell, she's the best cook in the world.
Bill Pike held up his hand to slow his riders as they crossed several large pastures while moving toward the log cabin in the distance.
What's going on, Bill?
I'm thinking, Roof. Something you don't know nothing about.
What's there to think about, Bill? I thought we was going to head into Jensen's ranch and blow the hell out of them.
Well, that's just it, Roof. Does it look like anybody's working this here ranch?
Gordon and the other man looked around. There were numerous cattle and some horses milling around in the fenced-in pastures between them and the cabin on the horizon. No cowboys or other workers were present.
Now that you mention it, Bill, it do look mighty slow for a working ranch.
And what does that tell you?
I don't know, boss. You're the brains of this outfit.
Yeah, and don't you forget it. Now, what I think is that either Jensen is in that cabin, or he's somewhere else on the ranch out of sight.
So, what's that mean?
It means we don't want to go riding in all hell bent for leather and warn him we're coming if he's in the cabin. No, we're going to ride in nice and slow, just like we come to pay a nice visit.
But what if he comes out of that cabin blasting away with his six killers?
Then we'll cut him down like autumn wheat.
Pike stood up in his stirrups to get a better look at the area around the cabin. Saw it was surrounded on three sides by heavy forest, though none of the trees were within 100 yards of the house.
Yeah, that Jensen is a careful feller, all right. He's cut the trees back away from the cabin to give himself a clear field of fire in all directions, so nobody can sneak up on him when he's there.
Pike saw another building 50 or so yards from the cabin that had the look of a bunkhouse to it.
And he's smart enough to keep the bunkhouse close so his men will be nearby in case he needs them. This ain't gonna be no easy hombre to corral. He's careful and he's smart.
What do you want us to do, Bill?
Roof, you take two men with you. Ride on around to the left there. Come up to the cabin over there. Blackie, you take two men. Circle off to the right and do the same thing. The rest of you come with me. We'll head straight on in toward the cabin. That way, if Jensen's in there and he sees us coming, he won't have no place to go to.
Will Bagby fished the canvas sack containing his tobacco out of his shirt pocket, and he was just taking one of his papers out of its packet when he stepped out of the bunkhouse to find four men on horses coming up the trail from the north pasture. He didn't recognize the men, and furthermore, he didn't like the look of them neither. They had the look of trouble written all over their faces, and the way they wore their guns tied down low on their hips let him know that they were not ordinary cowhands looking for work. He'd left his own pistol on a peg in the bunkhouse. It was too late to go for it now.
Howdy, gents. What can I do for you?
Howdy, mister. We're looking for a Mr. Smoke Jensen. We was told this was his ranch. Is he around?
Huh. What do you want to see Smoke about?
Well, I don't think that's any of your business, sir.
Suddenly, Sam Curry stepped from the bunkhouse door with a 12-gauge shotgun cradled in his arms.
Well, we work for Mr. Jensen. So if you don't want to state your business, you'll just have to ride on back to town.
Well, that's not very friendly, mister. Pulling an express gun on us like that.
Pike's eyes raised and he stared behind Curry and Bagby. And then he nodded once.
You bastards!
Pike calmly drew his pistol. The door to the log cabin slammed open, and a beautiful, dark-haired, hazel-eyed woman appeared on the porch. She was holding a sawed-off 10-gauge shotgun in her right hand and a short-barreled silver pistol in her left hand.
Hold on there! Drop those guns or I'll blow you to hell!
Rufus Gordon began to move his pistol toward her.
Oh, God! Damn! She blowed my goddamn fingers off!
As Pike's gun hand began to move, Sally eared back the twin hammers on the 10-gauge and smiled grimly at him.
Just twitch, mister, and give me a reason to scatter your guts all over my front yard.
Pike, who'd rarely ever feared a man and never a woman, felt his guts turn to ice, and he knew he was as close to dying as he'd ever been in his life. He let go of his pistol and let it swing down to hang by the trigger guard on his trigger finger.
That won't do, mister. My husband invented the border shift. Just drop the pistol on the ground.
Would your husband be Smoke Jensen, ma'am?
Sally didn't answer, but turned her attention to the other men riding with Pike.
Now all of you, unbutton those gun belts and let them drop.
Pike noticed some movement behind the woman out of the corner of his eye. But he kept his gaze fixed on her face so she wouldn't be warned.
We don't want no trouble, ma'am. We just wanted to talk to Smoke about some business.
Sally's eyes flicked to the two dead men lying next to the bunkhouse. Before she had a chance to respond, Blackie Johnson stepped up to her from around the corner of the cabin and stuck his pistol in her back.
Drop that scattergun, little lady.
Sally's fingers tightened on the triggers of the shotgun. For a moment, Pike thought she was gonna fire anyway. He felt his bowels rumble at the thought of what 10-gauge buckshot would do to him before her face fell and she lowered the two guns to the porch and raised her hand.
Take out the cabin, Blackie.
Blackie entered the door and returned a moment later.
All clear, boss. There ain't nobody else around.
Pike walked up to the woman.
Now, unless you want to end up like your men over there, tell us where your husband is, Mrs. Jensen.
You'll find out soon enough, you coward. In fact, his face will be the last thing you ever see when he finds out what you've done and comes to kill you.
You talk big for someone who's looking down the barrel of a six-gun lady.
I've looked down the barrel of guns before, mister, and I'm still here, which is more than you'll be able to say after Smoke gets through with you.
Well, I guess he's not here. So our best bet is to take his woman and hightail it off his home territory, boys.
Where we going, boss?
Let's head on up into the high country. We'll leave Jensen a note telling him if he wants to see his woman alive again, he'll come up there to talk to us. Tie her up good and tight and put her on a horse while I write Mr. Smoke Jensen a note.
While his men tied Sally's arms behind her and saddled up one of the horses in the nearby corral, Pike wrote a note to Smoke, and then he pinned it to Sam Curry's shirt.
Why don't you leave it in the cabin, boss?
Because I got other plans for the house.
Once the men had Sally up on the horse and had bandaged Rufus Gordon's right hand, Pike went into the cabin. He stripped the sheets off the bed and piled them in the middle of the kitchen floor, poured kerosene on them from the lanterns, and then put a match to the pile of cloth. By the time he was on his horse and they'd ridden out into the pasture toward the distant mountains, bright orange flames were licking the roof of the cabin, sending clouds of dark smoke into the overcast sky. Sally glanced back over her shoulder, tears of loss and frustration in her eyes. Ed Jackson, owner of the general store in Big Rock, along with his wife, Peg, checked a list in his hand for a final time while Emmett Walsh looked on.
Well, Emmett, I think we've gotten just about all the things Sally sent you into town for, the exception of the gingham cloth she wanted. Just tell her I'm expecting that in on the next shipment from Colorado Springs and ought to be here next week.
Yes, sir.
Emmett carried the bags out to the buckboard parked in front of the store where the other men from the Sugarloaf were waiting for him. The back of the buckboard was stuffed with bales of wire, stacks of fence posts, buckets of nails, four salt lick blocks, and other sundry ranching necessities they'd picked up from the feed store down the street. Monty Carson, sheriff of Big Rock, ambled by, taking a stroll down the boardwalk. He was, as usual, smoking his pipe and sending clouds of evil-smelling smoke into the chilly autumn air. He stepped over to the buckboard and stopped to lean his arms on the sides of the wagon.
Looks like Smoke's gonna have you boys busy doing some fencing before the winter snow comes.
Yep.
Well, don't let Smoke work you too hard.
Oh, Smoke's not there right now, Sheriff. He and Cal and Pearly are taking some beeves over to the Wiley spread to help them out after all their cattle died of tick fever. It's Miss Sally that's being the slave driver. I've never seen a woman work so hard to make a place look good.
Yep, Sally Jensen is a perfectionist, all right. But they got a right nice place to show for it.
You can say that again. She's even got us putting little wooden tags with numbers on them on the beeves' ears so we'll know when each of them drops their calves. Keeps it all in a little book up at the cabin.
That's what you get for working for an ex-school, Marm. Teachers like to keep things neat and orderly.
I don't mind. The Jensens are about the nicest folks I've ever worked for, and the food is the best in the area.
Especially those bear signs Sally's so famous for, huh? Well, I'll see you later, boys.
See you, Sheriff.
Emmett jumped up on the hurricane deck of the wagon and slapped the horses with the reins to get them started back toward the sugar loaf. Monty Carson was in his office, sitting leaned back in his chair with his feet up on his desk, enjoying his fifth cup of coffee of the morning, when Emmett burst in through his door.
God damn!
Sheriff, you gotta come quick. There's a big fire out at the Sugar Loaf.
What?
On the way to the ranch, we saw a big cloud of smoke come from the area of the cabin.
Sally all right?
Don't know, Sheriff.
Carson ran out of the door and stopped on the boardwalk.
You going over to the general store. Get Ed and Peg. I'll get Doc Spaulding and anyone else I can find.
As Monty Carson ran down the street toward Dr. Colton Spaulding's office, his heart was filled with dread to think that something might have happened to Sally Jensen. Lewis Longmont, owner of Longmont Saloon, was sitting at his usual table, sipping on a china cup filled with his favorite chicory-flavored coffee. Suddenly, Monty Carson and Doc Spaulding rushed through the bat wings as if their pants were on fire. Lewis turned his head and raised his eyebrows in question. It was not like Monty to get so riled up this early in the morning.
Lewis, there's a fire out at the Sugarloaf. Amy says it looks like it might be the house and Sally's there alone.
Let's go.
Lewis raced out of the saloon behind Carson and the doctor. When he got on his horse, Lewis noticed it looked like half the town was in the street, heading out toward the Sugarloaf. The Jensens were well-liked in Big Rock, and the citizens were on their way to help. By the time Sheriff Monty Carson and Lewis Longmont and the rest of the people from Big Rock arrived at the Sugar Loaf, smoking Sally's cabin had burned to the ground.
Yeah.
Monty got off his horse and walked over to where Emmett Walsh and Jim Sanders were standing over the bodies of Will Bagby and Sam Curry lying next to the bunkhouse. Their hats were in their hands, and expressions of sorrow were on their faces. Doc Spaulding ran over and knelt down next to the bodies. He examined them for a moment, taking note of the gunshot wounds. He glanced up at Emmett, and then over at the smoldering ruins of the cabin.
Any sign of Sally, boys?
No, sir. We even checked the bunkhouse just to make sure she wasn't in there.
I guess we're gonna have to comb through the rubble to see if Sally's in there somewhere.
Lewis walked up, stood next to Monty, and stared down at the bodies. He noticed a piece of paper stuck on the front of Sam's shirt. He pointed his finger.
You might want to take a look at that, Monty.
Monty bent down, took the paper, and held it up so he could read it.
Smoke Jensen, we got your wife. Come to Pueblo 1 week from today and go to one of the saloons. Come alone if you ever want to see her alive again. If you bring the law, you'll find pieces of her scattered all over the mountains. Son of a bitch, they've taken Sally.
Is there a signature on the paper?
Yeah, it's signed W. Pike.
W. Pike? Have you ever heard Smoke mention that name, Monty?
Not that I remember. Bastards gunned them down without giving them a chance.
Lewis looked at Emmett.
When was Smoke due to arrive at the Wiley's ranch?
Everyone in town was aware of the Jensen's charitable gift to the Wiley's, and a couple of other ranchers had donated some cattle for Smoke to add to the ones he was taking there.
He should be getting there today sometime.
We better head on over there and let Smoke know what's happened. Maybe he'll know who this Pike is and why he'd want to do this.
I'll take care of the bodies and see that they get a proper burial.
Ed Jackson stepped forward.
Tell Smoke the people of Big Rock will take care of cleaning up the cabin. We'll save whatever we can.
Monty and Lewis swung up into their saddle.
Ed, would you let my wife know where I'm going?
Monty and his wife lived a short way out of town on a small spread, and she wouldn't have heard what was going on yet.
Sure, Monty. I'll go by there on the way back to town.
Monty and Lewis each took a dally rope in their hands and jerked their horses' heads around and put the spurs to them, heading off toward the Wiley Ranch. It would normally be a 2 or 3 day ride, but if they pushed it and used the extra horses, they could make it in a day and a half. Smoke and Cal and Pearlie pushed the beeves they were herding over a crest above a valley and looked down at the Wiley Ranch in the distance. It wasn't a particularly large spread, just big enough for Mr. and Mrs. Wiley and one hired hand to run by themselves. Cal moved up from the drag position on the herd next to Smoke.
Oh, Lord! Jiminy, what's that smell?
Smoke pointed off to the side of one of Wiley's pastures. A large pile of what looked like cattle were being burned.
Mr. Wiley's burning the carcasses of his cattle that died from tick fever. That's about the only way to stop the fever from infecting the other cattle he puts on the ranch.
Yeah, that's good. I'd sure hate to have to drive these beeves all the way and have them take sick, too.
Smoke looked up as a light dusting of snow began to fall from the dark clouds overhead.
The cold weather and snow will help, too. It should kill off any ticks that still have the disease before they can make the new cattle sick.
Pearlie rode over to Smoke and Cal.
You two gonna sit here jawing all day, or we gonna get these beeves down to the Wileys?
What's your hurry, Pearlie?
It's time for lunch, Smoke, and I'm so hungry my stomach thinks my throat's been cut.
As they moved the cattle down the ridge toward the valley, Mr. Wiley and his hired hand saw them coming. They got on their horses and rode out to help them bring the herd in. Bill Wiley shut the gate on his north pasture behind the last of the beeves. He dusted his hands off on his britches and turned to Smoke and the boys.
Come on up to the house, man. Martha ought to have lunch ready by now.
We don't want to impose, Mr. Wiley.
Don't be silly. And please call me Bill. When I saw you boys up on the ridge, I told Martha to cook us up a couple of turkeys I trapped this fall.
Turkeys?
Yep, with all the fixings.
Snow began to fall from dark, ominous-looking clouds, and the temperature started to fall. Sally, riding near the front of the band of the outlaws, felt her hands begin to grow numb. Bill Pike looked at her and noticed for the first time she was only wearing a relatively thin house dress. Her heavier clothes and coats had been in the cabin they'd burned, and none of the men had thought to get something more suitable for Sally to travel in before the house was torched. Pike reached behind his saddle and pulled a yellow poncho out of his saddlebags. Even though it was thin, it was made of oilcloth, and it would keep the worst of the wind and snow off the woman. He kneed his horse over next to Sally's and prepared to drape it over her head and shoulders.
Since you've been so thoughtful, would you mind loosening my hands?
Pike glanced at her hands and saw that they were pale and almost blue from lack of circulation. Though he wasn't sure just yet what he was going to end up doing with this woman of Smoke Jensen's, he wasn't totally heartless. He slipped a long-bladed knife from a scabbard in his boot and sliced through the ropes binding Sally's hands behind her back. He held the knife point in front of Sally's face as she rubbed her hands, trying to get feeling back in them.
I'm gonna leave your hands untied, Mrs. Jensen, but I'm warning you. If you try to run or cause any other trouble, we'll catch you. And then I'll use this knife on your face, so even Smoke won't ever want to look at you again.
Point taken.
What?
I understand what you're saying.
Oh, that's good. Because my problem is with Smoke, not you. And I'd hate to have to hurt you.
What problem do you have with my husband, Mr. Pike?
That's none of your business, Mrs. Jensen.
I think it is my business, Mr. Pike. After all, when a woman's husband has to kill a man, it's only right she should know why he had to do it.
I think you got it backward, little lady. Smoke ain't gonna kill me. I'ma kill him.
Oh, do you have any idea how many men have said that before you, Mr. Pike? And how many men are dead because they underestimated Smoke Jensen?
Pike's expression darkened, and he clamped his jaws shut tight and spurred his horse on up ahead of Sally, so he wouldn't have to talk to her anymore. He rode up next to Rufus Gordon, who was riding bent over with his ruined hand pressed tight against his belly. Gordon glanced at him and then back over his shoulder at Sally.
Oh, I'm hurting awful bad, Bill.
I know, Ruf. We'll get you some laudanum when we get to Canyon City. We got to pass through there on the way to Pueblo.
When the time comes, I want to be the one to kill her, Bill. I owe her for what she done to my hand.
Maybe you ought to thank her instead, Roof. From where I sit, it looks like she could have put that bullet in your brain as easily as in your hand.
That don't matter, Bill. She damn near shot my hand off, and I'm gonna make her pay.
You'll do exactly what I tell you to do, if nothing else, Roof. I'm still head man of this outfit, and I'll tell you what you can do and what you can't do. You got me?
Yeah. I ain't trying to cross you, Bill.
That's good, Roof. Because what that lady did to you ain't nothing to what I'll do to you if you ever try to go against me.
After they finished the turkey dinner, Mr. Wiley and Smoke and the boys went out on Wiley's porch for coffee and smokes. While Wiley filled an old corn cob pipe with black tobacco, Smoke and Cal and Pearly all built themselves cigarettes. Wiley stood at the porch rail and watched as the snow became thicker.
I think it'd be best if you men spent the night here, Smoke. There ain't no use in you trying to get started tonight with this storm brewing.
We wouldn't want to put you and Martha out, Bill.
Don't be silly, Smoke. It won't be any trouble at all, and you and the boys can start out fresh in the morning after a good breakfast.
That sounds good to me, Smoke.
Oh, anytime somebody mentions food, it sounds good to you, Pearly.
We accept your hospitality, Bill. But only if Martha will let Pearly and Cal do the dishes after we eat.
That's a deal.
The storm broke during the night, and the day dawned with clear skies and the temperature just above freezing. After a hearty breakfast of scrambled hen's eggs, deer sausage, and biscuits almost as good as Sally made, Smoke and Bill Wiley went out on the porch to finish their coffee while Cal and Pearly helped Martha Wiley clean up the kitchen dishes. As they sat there, smoking and drinking coffee, Smoke's sharp eyes saw two figures appear on the ridge above the Wiley's Valley.
Looks like you have company coming.
Must be something important. Poor bastards must have ridden all night through that storm to get here.
Smoke stepped into the house and got his binoculars out of his saddlebags. When he put them to his eyes, he was startled to recognize the riders as Monte Carson and Louis Longmont.
Damn.
The presence of his two best friends way the hell out here could only mean serious trouble back home. His mouth grew dry and his stomach churned at the thought that maybe something had happened to Sally. Smoke jumped off the porch and ran through ankle-deep snow to meet Monty and Louis in the front yard.
What's wrong?
Monty and Louis looked at each other, neither wanting to be the one to break the news to their friend.
Someone attacked the Sugarloaf, Smoke. They killed Sam Curry and Will Bagby, burnt your house down, and took Sally with them.
Are you sure they took her?
Yeah, they left this note.
As Monty handed the note to Smoke, Bill Wiley came out of the house and took their horses' reins.
You men get on in the house before you freeze to death out there. I'll have my hand take care of your horses.
Minutes later, while Monty and Louis warmed up by eating breakfast and drinking several cups of coffee, they explained what had happened at the Sugarloaf to a rapt audience. When they finished, Smoke read the note for the fifth time, trying to remember if he'd ever crossed paths with anyone named W. Pike.
You have any idea why this Pike fella would do such things, Smoke?
Smoke started to shake his head, and then he remembered a day long ago when he and Preacher rode into Rico. Kirby and Preacher dismounted in front of the Trading Post saloon. As was his custom, Kirby slipped the thongs from the hammers of his colts at dismounting. They bought their supplies and were about to leave when two rough-dressed and unshaven men, both wearing guns, walked in and blocked the door.
Who owns that horse out there? The one with an SJ brand.
Kirby laid his purchases on the counter.
I do.
Which way'd you ride in from?
Preacher had slipped to the right, his left hand covering the hammer of his Henry, concealing the click as he thumbed it back. Kirby faced the man, his right hand hanging loose by his side. His left hand was just inches from his left-hand gun.
Who wants to know and why?
Pike's my name, and I say you come through my diggings yesterday and stole my dust.
And I say you're a liar.
Why, you little pup, I'll shoot your ears off.
Why don't you try? I'm tired of hearing you shoot your mouth off.
I think I'll just kill you for that.
Pike and his partner reached for their guns. Pike, with two holes in his chest, died with his back to a support pole, his eyes still open, unbelieving. Neither had managed to pull a pistol more than halfway out of leather.
Good God! I never even seen the draw.
Preacher had the muzzle of his Henry to cover the men at the tables. The bartender put his hand slowly on the bar, indicating that he wanted no trouble.
We'll be leaving now.
Kirby holstered his Colts and picked up his purchases from the counter. He walked out the door. Thompson and Haywood were in the big tent at the end of the street, which served as saloon and cafe. Preacher had pointed him out earlier and asked if Smoke needed his help. Smoke said no. The refusal came as no surprise. As he walked down the street, a man glanced up and spotted him, then hurried quickly inside. Smoke felt no animosity toward the men in the tent saloon. No anger, no hatred. But they came here after him, so let the dance begin. The word had swept through the makeshift town, and from behind cabin walls, trees, and boulders, the people watched as Smoke stopped about 50 feet from the tent.
Haywood! Thompson! You want to see me? Now step out and see me!
The two men pushed back the tent flap and stepped out, both of them angling to get a better look at the man they had tracked.
You the kid called Smoke?
I am.
With instinct born into a natural fighter, Smoke knew this would be no contest. Both men carried their guns tucked behind wide leather belts, an awkward position from which to draw, for one must first pull the hand up, then over, grabbing the pistol, cocking it as it's pulled from behind the belt, then leveling it to fire. It's also a dandy way to shoot oneself in the belly or side.
Pike was my brother.
And Shorty was my pal.
You should choose your friends more carefully.
They was just funnin' with you.
You weren't there. You don't know what happened.
You calling me a liar?
If that's the way you want to take it.
Thompson's hand moved closer to the .44 in his belt.
Take that back or make your play.
There's no need for this.
You're a damn thief. You stole their gold and then killed them.
Smoke, who had spent hundreds of hours practicing his deadly skills, thought that they were doing everything wrong. These men weren't gun hands. He could smell the fear sweat from the men.
I don't want to have to kill you.
That's because you're yellow.
Haywood grabbed for his gun.
Haywood! You bastard, you shot my gun!
Haywood dropped to the dirt, dying. As the angel of death began to enfold him in her cold, dark embrace, he had a vision of Thompson spinning in the street. Then he died. Thompson was on one knee, his left hand holding his shattered right elbow. His leg was bloody. Smoke had knocked his gun from his hand and shot him in the leg on the way down.
Pike was your brother, so I understand why you came after me. But you were wrong. I'll let you live, but stay with mining. If I ever see you again, I'll kill you.
The young man turned, putting his back to the dead and bloody. He walked slowly up the street, his high-heeled Spanish riding boots pocking the air with dusty puddles. Monte Carson, noting the faraway look in Smoke's eyes, shook him gently by the shoulder.
Smoke, you all right?
Yeah, Monte. I was just remembering a long time ago when Preacher and I went up against some men. One of them I killed was named Pike.
Do you think this W. Pike who kidnapped Sally is related to the man you killed?
I don't know, Lewis. There was another man there named Thompson who said he was Pike's half-brother.
Did you drill him too, Smoke?
No. As I remember, after I shot him in the arm and the leg, most of the fight went out of him, so I let him live.
You know better than that, Smoke.
I was only in my teens at the time, Lewis. I hadn't learned yet not to ever leave a man alive who has reason to come after you later.
Gentlemen, I ain't exactly an expert in all this, but I think we're getting off the point here. It don't matter why this galoot took Smoke's wife. The question is, what are we gonna do about it?
There is no we, Bill. Pike, whoever he is, made it clear in his letter that I was to come after him alone. I can't risk any harm coming to Sally by charging up to Pueblo with a posse. Even if they are my best friends.
But Smoke, you can't go after them alone. They're sure to be waiting for you along the trail. You wouldn't stand a chance.
Smoke ignored Pearlie.
Monty, did you check out the tracks around the cabin? Any idea how many men were riding with Pike?
Lewis and I both took a look, Smoke. It wasn't real clear, but looked like between 8 and 12 different tracks in the area.
Well, they probably didn't know where I was, or they would have come up here to get me. So that gives me a slight edge. I can be in Pueblo in a couple of days ahead of the deadline, before they're expecting me.
So could Monty and I, Smoke.
No. It's too dangerous, Lewis. Both you and Monty are too well known around Big Rock. If this Pike sent a couple of men to look the town over before attacking the Sugarloaf, they might have seen you around.
Well, that don't apply to Cal and me. We've been with you the whole time, so they couldn't have seen us.
Pearly's right, Smoke. Having a couple extra guns around just might give you the edge you need to save Sally.
Smoke thought for a moment, and then he slowly nodded.
You're right as usual, Lewis. And saving Sally is the most important thing to think about.
Smoke stepped over to his saddlebags and pulled out a wrinkled map of Colorado. He spread it on the table, then he bent over it.
See here. If they head straight to Pueblo from the Sugarloaf, they're going to have to go through Canyon City first. Lewis, I need to borrow some of that cash you always carry. I didn't bring much with me when I left the Sugarloaf.
Lewis grinned and pulled a large black wallet from his coat pocket. He pulled out a wad of greenbacks and handed it to Smoke.
It ought to be about $5,000 there, Smoke. Give or take 100.
Smoke handed the bills to Pearly.
I need for you to get me some supplies in Canyon City. Things I'm going to need to take on this gang of Pikes. Martha, could you get me a sheet of paper and pencil?
Martha quickly pulled out the kitchen drawer, grabbed a paper and pencil, and handed it to him. He made a list of the things he wanted Pearly and Cal to buy.
Bill, do you happen to have any dynamite or a long gun of any kind handy?
We got all the dynamite you'll need, Smoke. We used to clear stumps out when we cut wood. As for the long gun, the only thing I have is an old Sharps buffalo rifle my daddy used when we first started this ranch.
That'll do just fine, Bill. They don't make them any better than the Sharps.
Smoke handed the list to Pearly.
What you want us to do after we get this stuff, Smoke?
Just hang around town and keep your eyes open. I don't think they'll dare to take Sally into town. But if these men have been on the trail for a while, I doubt if they'll pass up the chance to visit a saloon if they get a chance. I need you two to find out just how many men we'll be going up against, and to get some idea of how good they are. But I don't want you or Cal to try anything that'll make them notice you.
What are you going to do, Smoke?
I'm going to try to cut their trail before they get to Canyon City. It shouldn't be too hard with recent snowfalls.
And then what?
I'm going to follow them and keep a close eye on them. If I get a chance, I'm going in and take Sally away from them. If not, I'll bide my time until they get to Pueblo and make their camp. Sooner or later, they'll let their guard down enough for me to make my move.
While Bill Wiley got the Sharps and the dynamite together, Smoke put his saddlebags on his horse. When Wiley came outside, Smoke packed the dynamite on one of the extra horses Lewis and Monty had used, along with the Sharps, a bag of extra ammunition for it, and some .44 cartridges for Smoke's pistols and the Winchester rifle he always carried with him.
I don't know if this'll be of any help, Smoke, but if you get in close, this thing'll blow a barn door down.
Much obliged, Bill.
And if you need another gun, I'm at your service, too.
I'll let you know, Bill.
Smoke looked around at his friends, realizing with the odds he was going up against, this might be the last time he saw him.
See you later.
Pearly slapped Cal on the shoulder.
You better get moving too, Cal.
Lewis stepped over to Pearly.
There's a telegraph in Pueblo, Pearly. If things look like they're going badly, wire me at Big Rock, and I'll come running.
We'll come running.
At mid-afternoon of their first day on the trail, snow began falling from low-hanging dark clouds. The air became so cold and so dark that Bill Pike decided to make camp and build a fire before he and his men froze to death in their saddles. They were still in the foothills of the mountains and were not making as good a time as he'd hoped, though he knew that the foul weather would bother anyone who was trying to follow him as much as it was slowing his men. He held up his hand, signaling the men riding behind him to stop.
Roof, tell the men to make camp here.
Sally, who'd been riding with her head down to keep the blowing snow out of her eyes, glanced up as the man holding the reins to her horse jerked it to a stop. The man had a deformed right arm with what appeared to Sally to be a frozen right elbow. His right leg hung out straight from the side of his horse and was affixed with two wooden braces with leather straps that ran from his upper thigh down to his ankle. She noticed that he continually stared at her with hate-filled eyes, though she had no idea why, since she hadn't heard him open his mouth the entire journey.
Are we making camp here?
The man awkwardly swung his right leg over his saddle and hopped to the ground. Bill Pike tied his horse's reins to one of the pine trees, and then he walked over to help Sally down off her horse.
And on down, Mrs. Jensen. We're gonna make a fire to get some of the chill out of our bones and heat up some food.
Pretending to be more helpless than she was, Sally let him take her elbow as she got down off her horse. As the flames of the campfire rose, casting an orange glow over the gloom of the copse of trees they were under, she moved as close as she could, holding her hands out almost in the flames to heat some life back into them. Shortly, Bill Pike handed her a steaming tin cup filled with dark-boiled coffee.
Sorry, we ain't got no sugar nor milk.
That's all right.
Sally downed half the cup to get some heat into her stomach.
Ugh, I take it back. What's wrong with that man over there? He looks like he wants to kill me.
Well, he probably does, Mrs. Jensen, and you can't hardly blame him. It were your husband who ruined his arm and his leg for it.
Smoke did that?
Yep.
When did that happen?
More than 20 years ago.
Sally finished her coffee and handed the cup back to Pike.
And he's just now getting around to doing something about it?
Well, it seems old Zeke there spent some time in a prison over at Yuma for rape and murder. And he said the whole time he was doing it to that woman, he was planning in his mind what he'd do to Smoke Jensen's woman if he ever got the chance.
That poor man.
What?
Yes. To be eaten up with hatred for all those years must have made his life miserable. But I do know one thing. If Smoke did that to him, then he deserved it. Because Smoke Jensen never shot a man except in self-defense, or that he needed shooting.
I'll be sure and let Zeke know that.
What is his last name?
Thompson. Zeke Thompson. He's my half-brother.
So that's why you attacked my men and burned my house down? To avenge Mr. Thompson's wounds?
No, not really. I don't give a damn about Zeke. Never did like him much anyway.
But then why?
'Cause right before Jensen shot Thompson, he shot and killed my full brother, Ethan Pike. I didn't know about it till Zeke got out of prison a year or so ago and looked me up. When I found out, I decided to make things right and to make Smoke Jensen pay for what he done.
So your heart's filled with hate also?
Nah, I didn't particularly like my brother Ethan either. But there are just some things a man's gotta do. Killing the man who killed his kin is one of them.
Could I have another cup of coffee, please?
Oh, sure. Wouldn't want you to freeze to death before the boys have had a chance to help keep you warm tonight.
Pike handed her the cup. Sally's face showed no fear whatsoever.
So that's how it's going to be, is it?
Been a long time since the boys have seen a woman as pretty as you are, Mrs. Jensen. It'd be a shame to disappoint them.
I can understand that, but...
But what?
It's just that I thought you said you wanted revenge on Smoke Jensen.
Yeah, we do.
Raping and killing me out here in the wilderness wouldn't be near as satisfying as waiting until you have Smoke Jensen prisoner, and then doing it in front of him, don't you think?
You're just hoping that Jensen will get the best of us and save you before that happens.
Well, of course I am, Mr. Pike. But that doesn't change the fact that if you want the ultimate revenge on Smoke Jensen, that would be the way to do it.
I'll tell you one thing, Mrs. Jensen. You've got sand.
Well, what do you think about my idea?
I think you're right. If Smoke truly loves you, I can't think of anything that'd make him suffer more than to see my men take you on right in front of him. So I guess that's the way it's gonna be.
Sally looked around the fire at the men sitting there, drinking coffee or whiskey, and staring at her with hungry eyes.
I don't know, Mr. Pike. It looks like your men may have other ideas.
My men do what I tell them to do, Mrs. Jensen. Don't you worry none about that.
I hope so.
Blackie Johnson, who'd been named the group's designated cook since he was the only one present who could make biscuits that were at all edible, finished frying several large slabs of fatback bacon. He took a large knife and sliced the slabs up while they were still sizzling in the pan.
Meat's ready.
The men rushed over with 10 plates in their hands to help themselves to the bacon, some beans he had cooking in a pot on the fire, and more coffee. Johnson took it upon himself to fix a plate of food for Sally and take it to her.
Here you go, Mrs. Jensen.
Sally sensed that this man was different from the rest, not quite as coarse and rough.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Would you tell me your name?
Zechariah Johnson, but most of the men call me Blackie.
Forgive me for saying so, Mr. Johnson, but you don't look like you belong with these other men.
Don't let me be impolite fool you, Mrs. Jensen. I am no better than the rest of the gang.
But you speak as though you've had some education.
Yes, ma'am. I finished high school and even had a year of college back in Ohio. I wanted to be a veterinarian.
What happened to change your mind?
I came upon this man beating a team of horses that couldn't pull a wagon he had loaded too heavy. And when he refused to quit hitting them, I hit him.
Well, that's understandable.
Yeah, but it seems I hit him too hard. When I saw he was dead, I hightailed it out of town and headed west. I've been on the out-hoot trail ever since.
Just then, the man named Zeke Thompson stepped around the fire and shoved Blackie aside.
Don't you go trying to get this bitch into your blankets tonight, Johnson. She belongs to me first, and if there's anything left when I'm done, then you can have it.
Pike moved behind Thompson and grabbed him by the shoulder and spun him around.
Shut your pie hole, Zeke. Ain't nobody touching Mrs. Jensen till I say so.
Zeke, who was wearing a pistol on his right hip with the handle facing forward for a cross-handed draw, let his left hand move toward his belly.
That ain't what we planned, Bill, and you know it.
Quick as a flash, Pike's pistol was in his hand and the barrel was pressed up against the underside of Thompson's chin.
Now, Zeke, you just calm down and try and remember who's the ramrod of this gang. Anytime you think you can do a better job, you're welcome to try and take over.
Oh, you know that ain't it, Bill. I just wanted to teach this uppity slut a lesson.
You'll get your chance, Zeke, but not until I say it's time.
Pike glanced over his shoulder as he eased the hammer down on his Colt and put it back in his holster.
And that goes for the rest of you, too. Mrs. Jensen will be left alone until I give the word. Anybody who touches her will have to answer to me.
Sally, watching this byplay, thought she saw a small smile curl Blackie Johnson's lips. She made a mental note that he might turn out to be a valuable ally when it came time for her to attempt to escape.
If you're through eating Mrs. Jensen, it might be better if you turned in for the night. I want you to get out of sight so the men can quit thinking about what they're all thinking about.
Sally nodded and got up off the ground. Followed Pike over to where he'd fixed a couple of blankets on top of a ground sheet under a pine tree.
I'm gonna put you over here next to me so nobody will mess with you.
Does that include you, Mr. Pike?
Oh, it's not that I wouldn't like to, Mrs. Jensen, but I gave you my word nothing will happen until we've captured your husband, and that's the way it's gonna be.
Good night then, Mr. Pike.